Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And Joe, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but we have a special guest.
I am oblivious. I'm completely unaware.
You're unaware that we've been spending the last 15 minutes having Mark try to figure out how to work his computer?
I go through spats of losing time.
So with us, for the first time since November, is the super fan, Mr. Mark Piscati.
And we'll give him a hi, guys. I've been here for a while. You guys just had me on mute. You didn't see me in the upper left hand corner waving November. My hands. Just like turn off.
Oh, like, turn on the mic. Where's that button again? So, yes, Mr. Mark Piscati is joining us this week. And this is only fitting because it is a round number. It is episode 120. My God.
What do you get somebody for their 120th anniversary?
Steak knives, Joe.
Coffin? Dirt?
Coffin, I suppose. Yeah.
Nice shiny tombstone.
And the show keeps growing. We have only done one episode this month, and we are already almost at our record for monthly listens.
Which is
Am I getting a paycheck?
Which is what?
Am I getting a paycheck?
The number of downloads, the record,
no,
I thought was six.
But got it. Damn it.
I'm not used to this talking over Mark thing again. It's been a while.
So. I know, yeah. Or Mark talking over you thing again. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, Joe.
Matt.
Mark.
Mark.
What have you been up to? What's going on in the world?
What have you watched?
Tell us everything you've watched
since November.
No, please. It'll be Maverick 50
I'm
going
to go to the bathroom. I'll be back.
I watched Maverick on Thanksgiving.
I think I only watched it twice, guys. Wow. No, I got hooked on Little House on the Prairie. Got to start watching that. I don't know why. I got addicted to it.
Horror.
Did you get to that episode though that we discussed with the guy in the mask that rapes the girl?
No. Oh. I actually watched that. He watched it.
Yeah. He watched that.
Yeah, I watched it, but I'm only on like season three. Spooky. But I can't wait till they get to the end where they blow up Walnut Grove.
Spoiler alert. I have not seen that.
Now Joe has nothing
now
to watch.
I'm never gonna watch Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
No, I did. I've been just taking it easy from horror movies. I've been watching, some horror movies. I recently watched Warzone in the movie theater. Did you guys get a chance
movie?
To watch it? Warzone?
No, it's not. But I've heard wonderful things about it.
It's fantastic. Just don't go into the movie theater expecting Saving Private Ryan or anything. It's nothing of the sort. It's very realistic. There's no music. And it's about a troop that gets trapped in this house and they're surrounded. And I think it's called an IED went off and it blew off some guy's leg. And it's all about these guys reenacting the film all the way from when it starts to the end. There's no pause, there's no cuts, and it's just basically Alex Garland, the director, and one of his fellow troopers telling the story of how what happened to this guy, this trooper named Elliot, who was unconscious throughout the whole film. And he always wanted to know like exactly what happened instead of just, telling him the story. They actually made him a film for this guy named Elliot. But it's a wonderful film. Highly recommend watching it.
Any horror movies?
It's a horror to watch, it's
horrific.
Just blood screaming all the way through. It's pretty tense. But no, it's not a horror film. But I'm really excited about Until Dawn that's coming out in 2 days, I believe, the 25th.
It'll be out the day of this release
episode. Yeah.
Oh, yes. This Friday, right? Have you guys seen the trailer for that?
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Have you played the game?
No, I have not.
It's kind of like a choose your own adventure game. It like storyboards, but you choose, and there is actions where you do things and pull levers, levers and whatnot. But it's an excellent horror game. And the trailer looks phenomenal. I'm really looking forward to seeing that one. And another trailer that came out, I Know What You Did Last Summer. Did you guys check that one out?
No.
I did. I couldn't be more disappointed.
Yeah, it looks horrible.
It looks like, hey, remember there was a movie called Scream? So we're going to start off trying to copy that.
Yeah, exactly. You got Freddie Prinze Jr. back in it. You got
Freddie Prinze Jr.
What's her name? Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yes.
She's in it too.
Thank you.
Oh, she's in it too. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't look good. And you know Freddie Prinze is gonna die in it. And they're just gonna do him like Dewey. Die in it. Huh?
I hope they both die in it.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be nice.
In the movie, not in real life. I mean, that's just
there better be. What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for? Can't wait for that scene. 28 years later, trailer came out, the official trailer. I don't think Cillian Murphy is going to be in this one, but it looks great. It's coming out in May. Super excited about that one. But no, just been taking it easy, you know?
Nice.
All right.
Joe, what have you watched recently?
I don't believe we talked about this last time. Did we talk about Drop?
No.
Okay.
Wait a minute, did we?
Because that came out on the 11th. I don't think I saw it until the 12th, so.
No.
I don't think that, so.
Yeah, the 12th would have been Saturday after our episode released, I think, or something like that.
So I saw Drop in the theaters, which is kind of a whodunit drama, mystery, thriller, kind of suspenseful horror type thing. Mm-hmm. This was actually a fun movie. It's not gory. It's not bloody. It's exactly that. It's a whodunit. It's like a Scooby-Doo mystery, but it at least is suspenseful and it's entertaining and it does keep you guessing. It's not one of those, like, I mean, it's the guy who's responsible for what's going on in the evening. They don't hide it extremely well. I didn't care. It's kind of a fun ride. Megan Fahey, I believe is her name. I'm sorry, for those of you who are completely oblivious to what I'm talking about, it's about a widowed mother who goes out on a first date, and she's at this fancy restaurant, this rotating restaurant up in Chicago. And while she's there, she keeps getting these information drops onto her phone with little text messages and videos. And it's basically somebody's telling her that if she doesn't kill her date, they will kill her son, who's being babysat at home by her sister. And so all the while she's trying to avoid, obviously, killing her date, but try to figure out who keeps sending her these messages, because as they plan out in the or they divulge, is these drops can only be given to you by somebody within 50 feet of your current position. So we know it's somebody in the restaurant. So it's just a matter of who. But it's great. It's well, I don't want to say great. It was fun. But I think it's worth it. I don't know that I would necessarily say you got to run out and see it in the theater.
Right.
But it was still, I wasn't upset that I spent money on it. Let's just say that.
Nice. So. Nice.
It's got that Die Hard like feel to it, right?
Not really. I wouldn't put the two in the same basket just because Die Hard's more of a action film. This is more passive, just like who's doing this type of thing. It's
more suspenseful, right?
Yeah. And then also today, against my better judgment, I watched the 2025 film Wolfman with Christopher Abbott and Julia Gardner. And I am still 100% on my track of I don't like Wolfman movies because I think they're all dumb.
I'm surprised you watched that. I don't understand.
Why'd you do it?
I only watched it because it's free. It's on Peacock. And it's just, you know, I mean, do it for the love of the show. You gotta suffer for your craft, pal.
I still want to watch it because I did hear from a couple people that it's better than you think. But I'm surprised you watched it because you hate Wolfman movies anyway, and it's not really a well liked overall Wolfman.
I would dare to say it's not even a Wolfman movie.
Yeah,
agree.
But I'm not gonna get too far into it if you're gonna watch it. But I do want to talk about this in depth after.
I will watch it.
If you're expecting an Academy Award winning performance from Julia Gardner, then don't. You will be disappointed.
I'm not. I'm not expecting.
She lends nothing to this film at all whatsoever. Least of all, emotion. I don't think she has any.
Yeah,
I know.
Sad because she's great. So
she's a wonderful actress.
Yeah.
I don't think you could say that.
Not in this one. No.
Yeah.
No.
So.
Well, I mean, the script and the directing and all of that makes a huge difference, obviously.
But, oh, yeah. I wouldn't pin any of this on the script. Just we'll reconvene after you've seen
all
it.
Right. And, all right.
Yeah. So other than that, I, like most of the rest of us Americans, probably watched season 2, episode 2 of The Last of Us.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm still.
And episode 1. I don't think we've talked since episode 1 came out.
Oh, yeah. I guess we haven't. So I've been watching The Last of Us season 2, which has been tremendous. I will say, without trying to spoil anything and tiptoe around it, what's lying underneath the ice, I thought was absolutely epic and amazing.
Yeah.
And like far better than anything the hacks at The Walking Dead could have ever put together. Mm-hmm. So I am all on board The Last of Us choo-choo train. And we're pulling into the station. I'm loving it. So,
yeah,
that's pretty much it. That's all I got that's horror related.
Yeah, I've been watching Last of Us 2 and enjoying it. And you know, I think everybody it's I know a lot of people compared it to the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones or whatever, but it's not the same because everybody I know who's watched this movie knew this was coming. There's a certain thing coming that everybody was saying season 2, watch out, there's this thing coming. And so the Red Wedding took everyone. I had read the Game of Thrones books, so I knew the Red Wedding was coming, and I was just waiting to hear about it. And nobody, I didn't hear any chatter about, oh, wait until this happens. And then people who watched it started going, losing their minds when they saw that episode. And but in this one, I think everybody, most people were aware of what was going to be happening. But
if you played the game.
Well, not only I've never played the game, but everybody that I've known for, I've been aware of the game, and I've known for a couple of years this big thing that happens. And so I think a lot of people were wondering whether they were actually, I think the more the conversation online anyway was, are they actually going to do that? You know, because especially after the show you just mentioned, The Walking Dead, you know, that the show died after that, you know?
Yeah.
It could go either way. There's the Game of Thrones example where the show exploded after the Red Wedding, or there's the Walking Dead example where the show died after that. And I feel like they handled this in a way that the show's, I don't know if it's going to explode after this, but it's not going to kill the show, because the way The Walking Dead did it was so brutal. It really killed a lot of people, you know, and a lot of people were just like, I'm done with this show, you know. But I don't know, it's hard to talk about without saying too much. But if you get a chance, watch this show. It's very well done.
I want to say I must have been living with my head in the sand forever.
Oh,
because I've never played the game. I don't get online and look up stuff about The Last of Us. I'm in no forum that talks about it. Not that I'm avoiding it, I just never come across it. But so this was a total shocker to me. I was blindsided, like somebody hit me up against the head with a golf club or something. I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
And I do want to say Caitlin Dever, who is our Negan, I guess, in this category, in this story. So, she's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. She's good.
She's really good. She's really good. Everyone's freaking out about the casting because in the video game, you know, she's super buff and she's muscular. She looks like a Jack Reacher kind of character. Who cares about that as long as she does it well? And she did it well.
Yes. That's why I say in this one, ignorance is bliss, because I have no idea what this character should look like.
Right.
Yeah. And I think she's absolutely fantastic and devious in this show.
Yeah. She's wonderful.
I want to go watch No One Will Save You again because of her.
Oh yeah, she's
great. Yeah, and the problem is that now that, you know, this has happened, the people who played the video game for The Last of Us, you know, Part 2, they were so upset about it. They didn't, you know, they finished the game, but they didn't like how the game transpired after this event. And so I'm worried that, you know, I mean, there's only two games. And so what's season three going to be? Are they going to do like The Walking Dead and just go off script, kind of like how they did with the book? And it's like, are people going to be interested after this? I'm going to be curious to see, because there's a lot of hateful people out there about the casting. And I have no problem with the castings at all with anybody.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think in a lot of ways, fandom kind of just sucks in general. It's, you know, it's got a lot of negativity.
Yeah, fans.
Yeah.
Thanks, our listeners.
Everybody just needs to relax.
No, you know what
I mean. Take it easy.
You just pinpointed our demographic.
Now, we don't.
You all suck.
Yeah, well, it is. It's toxic, I think, of this fandom. I'm not saying fans.
Yes.
Fandom can be really toxic.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, I think, especially, and people have been incredibly horrible to the girl who plays the main girl in Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
They've been horribly mean about it too. And so
it's not right.
No. So anyway, the next, I also saw, well, this kind of brings us full circle. Our buddy who came on the show, Andy Griscoviak. Yeah. Yeah. Mark. Oh yeah, that's right. Mark, you weren't here for that episode. But he has a movie he wrote called Marshmallow, and that just came out. Now it's not playing in wide release, and I have no information on when it's going to be streaming, but it, you know, I recommend it for streaming. It was a lot of fun. I thought, it's a summer, I guess I can read the tagline, but it basically, I saw it in the theater here in Burbank, I think because they just had a special weekend, a couple days of screenings. I don't think it's playing there now even, but anyway, the tagline is question everything, a secluded summer camp, or I'm sorry, at a secluded summer camp, timid and introverted 12-year-old Morgan is thrust into a waking nightmare when a once fabled campfire tale becomes real. As a mysterious figure descends upon the camp, Morgan and his newfound friends must embark on a treacherous journey and uncover a sinister reality buried beneath the surface. This was, I thought, really interesting and kind of fun, and I think it's going to play very well on streaming. And I hope it gets picked up by Shudder or someplace like that, because I think you're going to enjoy it. Corbin Burnson is in it, and I didn't recognize him until the movie was over and I saw his name in the credits. And then there's, you know, a lot of characters that you've never seen before. It is a lower budget film, but it looks like those old summer camp movies. It's set in present day, but it does look like those old summer camp movies. But there's a twist to it, and it's pretty interesting. And so I guess the only reason I mention that there's a twist, and I don't think it's something anybody's going to be able to discover, but the only reason I mention it is because there are some things that happen that made me think, why would they do that? You know? And then I was like, that's so unrealistic. And it kind of put me off a little bit until things started to be revealed. And then I realized what was going on. So it, you know, without saying too much,
I'm a little confused. Could you just tell me
exactly what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think you'll enjoy it, Joe. It's not perfect, but it was a lot of fun. And I would like to get Andy back on the show at some point, when it, maybe around the time it streams. I thought I'd heard that it might be streaming in the fall. I didn't get to go. He had two days that they were street or that they were showing it here in Burbank at the AMC, Saturday and Sunday. And I think it was Saturday and Sunday. And we went to the Sunday showing, and I think he and all the casts were at the Saturday showing. So I was hoping he would come Sunday as well. And I was going to, you know, talk to him or whatever. But I thought I heard from somebody that it will be streaming sometime late summer or fall. So if that's the case, it would be great to have him on or whatever.
For those of you following along at home, Andy Griskowiak, we had him on the show because he was the writer of the Bruce Campbell hit Black Friday that Mark right. hooked us up with.
Yeah. So anyway, Marshmallow, definitely check it out when it comes to streaming. I don't have any specific information about that though. And then
it's pronounced Marshmallow.
Marshmallow. Marshmallows.
Yeah. Mallow. Yeah.
And then I saw a real gem of a movie, and this is on Netflix. And I had heard a lot of stuff about it in film festivals last year. It's listed on Letterboxd and everywhere else, I think, as a 2024 movie, but that's only because it was in festivals. It's actually a 2025 movie, and that is Dead Talents Society. They just dropped it to Netflix. It's got no fanfare or anything. You kind of have to search for it because it doesn't pop up even. But I had heard about it on another podcast, Colors of the Dark. They talked about it when it was in film festivals. So I put it on my watch list and it pops up and I'm like, huh? And so I go to Netflix. I can't find it. So I actually had to search it for it to pop up for me. It is a Taiwan film and it is a horror comedy. And it's about basically when you die, you become a ghost and you must scare the living or you will vanish forever. So you can hang around for a while, but the minute your family starts throwing away something important that was yours, you know, like they start moving on with their life, you have only, I think, 30 days or something like that to establish yourself as a scary ghost to remain among the living. Otherwise you will just vanish and fade away. And so this girl is hanging around her family after she's dead and they misplace something of hers and she starts to flicker in and out. And so that's when this guy comes up to him and says, hey, you've got to come up with a talent for scaring people. And it's so great. It is hilarious. It's very well done. Michelle and I were cracking up, and Michelle, I could tell, just loved it because she kept saying, this is brilliant. And it is. It's a lot of fun. I had a great time with it. It's probably, I will not be surprised if this is in my top 10 this year. So it kind of, you know, reminds me, remember One Cut of the Dead? Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of that kind of thing. It's that sort of humor, I guess. It's not the same story, but it's that kind of lighthearted horror humor. And it very clever. So definitely highly recommend Dead Talent Society. And like I said, it's on Netflix. So
yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
That and the Wolfman will be in your
top. Do it. I'm sure it will. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that brings us to Joe's pick. And now I don't even remember what the name of your theme was. What was
it? Art Horror.
Oh, Art Horror. That's right.
Horror.
Yeah. His first name's Arthur, last name Horror.
Yeah.
Okay, so I picked Art Horror primarily because it was an excuse for me to watch a movie, and then I stumbled upon two others that I had never seen, had never heard of, and currently am infatuated with, puzzled by even. So first of which we're going to touch on is, of course, 2016, The Neon Demon. Directed by Nicholas Winding Refn. And I want to, before I forget, I don't want to go any further. There's a soundtrack, or there's songs in this EDM, in this film, which are fantastic. They've been on heavy rotation on my phone every day to work. So I do appreciate the music in this film. So already to a great start.
Yeah. You never heard the EDM before until just now?
No, I've heard EDM, but the EDM in this film in particular is very good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm aware. I'm versed in the EDM world. anyway, the synopsis of this film. Oh, sorry. Starring Elle Fanning, Keanu Reeves, Christina Hendricks, Jenna Malone. An odd combination for an even odder movie. This is about an aspiring model, Jessie, who she's new to Los Angeles, and then her beauty and youth generate an intense fascination and jealousy within the fashion industry, and it may prove sinister. We'll have to find out. Mark, why don't you start us off, since it's been a while for you. So what'd you think of Neon Demon?
Okay, so Neon Demon. Okay, so like what happened? Like, are they witches? Are they cannibals? Was Fanning going through rituals throughout the film? Was that a three triangle upside down thing, Lucifer hex sign that she was heading on the runway? I'm guessing yes, and yes, and another yes, and then yes. I pretty much think I got the grasp of it because it was very artsy and I didn't know really where it was going. I was confused with the cougar on the bed in the hotel. I was confused with seeing Keanu Reeves just show up and like, why did he even take that role? I think he shouldn't have. He should have just gave it to like a character actor. I think it would have done more good for the film just having Keanu Reeves in it because he didn't really matter much in this film. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just doing a favor, but I didn't think it. Keanu Reeves did a favor for it, but of course it reminded me to The Substance. It had a lot of The Substance, similarities or whatnot. Yeah. But I loved the music, the EDM in it. It reminded me kind of like Michael Mann's Manhunter with like the synthesizers and whatnot. He's kind of have like a, you know, that's kind of like how he does his films. But I really enjoyed it. Beautiful women. I mean, it was hard watch for me at the beginning of the film because one, I was like getting back into like reviewing films and Joe had to pick art horror films. And I'm just going, man, couldn't have just been a slasher. It'd have been so much easier to talk about. I really enjoyed the film.
The CineScare podcast, Mark, you know that.
we're an uppity up horror podcast.
We're investigating the stories that you want to hear.
I love the ending of it. It's basically, you know, you eat a beautiful human girl and you get healthy from it. And, you know, you become beautiful from it. Some can take it and some can't.
I did the wrong one.
Oh, okay.
I loved it. I really liked it. It was fun to watch. The strobing effects maybe warn people before, those strobes happen. Because I thought I was about to have a seizure. Like, I was, like, seeing spots. Strobe light scene.
Was there a warning at the beginning?
No.
There may have. Oh, I thought there was. Okay.
I don't remember now.
I can't remember.
I don't remember any strobe.
There should be.
Because sometimes those strobes kind of mess with me. And I was like, I had to close my eyes for a couple seconds to regain.
Yeah.
But no, I did go back to the beginning. No, there is no warning.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, get some seizures out there.
Yeah.
And this is actually my first Elle Fanning film I've ever watched. She's really good.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm sure I've seen her in something else.
You haven't seen Maleficent?
No.
Yeah, I saw that.
Benjamin Button?
Benjamin Button?
Yeah, The Curious.
Oh, yeah, I did see that one.
She was in Super 8, that Spielberg film.
Yeah. Super 8. Yeah, it's not Spielberg, but J.J. Abrams.
Wasn't it? J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, he was making
it. Oh, she was Spielberg. In Super 8? Oh, yeah. I guess she wasn't really that memorable for me, especially in Benjamin Button's. Oh, she was the girl that he had a crush on, right, in Super 8?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
Well, maybe, but she was very young, so didn't quite look the same. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's been a while since I've seen both of those
films. I think she was 2 years old in the movie I Am Sam, where Sean Penn plays a mentally disabled.
Oh, that was her? Person. I thought it was Dakota. I see. I mix her and Dakota up all the time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Matt, what did you think of this?
Well, I did text you 30 minutes in saying I hate this movie, and I came away from it not hating it as much. Or I would say that I didn't hate it. I do think it's beautiful to look at. The anamorphic lens that they used, those shots were just amazing. But I do think it was a bit like in the style versus substance balance. It went for style way more than substance, and it. I just felt like there wasn't a real human being in the whole movie. You know, it just didn't, I don't know. I came away from it just feeling kind of
dirty.
Meh. No, not dirty. Just sort of meh, you know, I didn't really care for it that much. But it is beautiful to look at. Like visually, it is absolutely stunning, and not, you know, just because it's beautiful women, but because the shots themselves are just incredible. Every single shot is like a work of art. You know, Keanu Reeves is doing his serious voice, you know. Let's see. Yeah, that dude like kissed her. He knew she was 16. He still tried kissing her. Like I thought for a minute when they went on the date and he found out that she was 16 years old, that he was going to be like, oh God, I'm going to take you home now. But he still tried kissing her.
How old was that guy anyways?
He looked like at least in his 20s. I wrote, I'm not sure there's a real human in any part of this. At times I felt like it kind of became in a parody of itself a little bit. It just, I don't know. And then the scene with the photographer when he's, you know, the big time photographer she goes to, you know, that whole scene and a lot of this movie in general. Have you ever seen the Key and Peele skit where it's the Vampire Club and they're all doing that dramatic move? You've never said, oh, you gotta, I'll send it to you. But it's sort of like that. It's like, dude, do these people really live like this? Is it, everything is just set up for the movie, it seemed. And then like, you know, there's a mountain lion gets into her room and somehow she owes him money. Like, I guess because she left her door open, but I don't think that's, I don't know. Let's see. And then I looked at it and I was thinking if a less, you know, stylized version of this would be any better. And I don't think so. I think that the style that, you know, the aesthetic of this film kind of made up for a lack of substance underneath. So now this was definitely my least favorite of the three. The next two, of course, I enjoy a lot more. And one of the next two, I absolutely loved. But this one, I didn't come away from it hating it. The first half hour, I was like, oh shit, I got to sit through another 90 minutes of this. But I did, you know, especially once the kind of antagonists started doing their thing, it was at least interesting. I will say that much. It's a very interesting film to see and whatever. So
yeah, it definitely ramped up, you know, at the end. But I mean, I feel like the Neon Demon's more of a PG-13 version of The Substance, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's hard to compare those two. It's
right,
not even as good.
I wouldn't say PG-13, not with that scene in the mortuary.
Oh,
of course, right. The ending of the film.
Oh shit!
I would not say that's a PG-13.
Forget about the mortuary.
I'm like I said before, I'm infatuated with this film in particular. Although there is one theme throughout all three of these films that I would say they are all three just absolutely visually stunning. They are gorgeous to look at. This one in particular, The Neon Demon, also the color use throughout the entire film was fantastic. And I'm like Matt said, I'm negating the fact that there's models and half naked women, could care less. It's just what I see on the screen, the visuals that they put together for this film are tremendous. And he's obviously influenced by Kubrick quite a lot. There's a lot of floor to ceiling wide shots in there. And they even called the lipstick that one of the girls is putting on was called Red Rum. I think part of the reason that fascinates me are the bizarre happenings, like the whole thing, it puts you on edge from the minute you're introduced to her laying on the couch being posed like she's dead. But we are familiar with the, at least from what, you know, we know what the modeling industry is like. We have a background in there. We can be familiar with stuff like that. But then there's oddball things like a mountain lion showing up in this girl's bedroom and destroying it, which has nothing to do. I don't know what that was supposed to prove or do. It certainly didn't move the storyline along any, except for introducing Keanu Reeves as being an absolute dick. But I mean, honestly, they could have cut that whole section of the movie out, and I think it would have stood its ground just fine.
Yeah,
without it
was unnecessary, really.
Yeah, it was also, well, I would almost say the same thing for Christina Hendricks, but I did like that scene where she walked back out of her office and there were three models sitting there just waiting to get their chance to go talk to her, and she just looks at one and points at her and says, "You can go." Mm-hmm. Which just further illustrating how cutthroat, no pun intended, the modeling industry is out there. Now, when they start getting into the gore, I didn't think models ate, let alone ate each other. But I got to say, the visual graphic of them, of Gigi throwing up the eyeball, was particularly disgusting.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I also wanted to point out that the mansion that they used at the end of the film was the same mansion that they shot the ending of Scream 3 in, which I thought was interesting. So, so there's that. But not the last one, but the first two of these movies, in my opinion, are too long. I think they could have done with some editing, but I think that's the director sort of saying, you know, I'm going to throw my vision up there, and I care more about what I have to say than what the audience has to say. But anyway, I still really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fantastic watch. So in retrospect, I don't know that I was enjoying myself while I was watching it, but after I've had time to let it marinate in my brain for a while, I appreciated it quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the cougar, I read somewhere that, one of the girls transformed into a cougar because it was like a ritual that she was going through, and they were checking on her because of all the stuffed, you know, and or not stuffed animals, you know, the heads of the deers in that one room. It's like they were hunters or something, and they could shape shift. I think it was just reaching. I just like stopped reading or watching, and I was just like, no, that's not right. I don't know if they were just reading, but it was like they're saying that they were just giving her tests and like bringing her more and more like impure so they can like eat her or whatnot, you know. So I don't know, some pagan kind of stuff. That's what they were saying. So I don't know if that's true or not.
I didn't get any of that.
No, anything.
I'm not sure I followed what you were saying.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Okay. So are we ready to move along down to the next painting?
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Okay. The next one we were fortunate enough to watch was Melancholia from 2011. Of course, directed by Lars von Trier. And starring Kirsten Dunst, Kiefer Sutherland, Alexander Skarsgård, Stellan Skarsgård, John Hurt. I could go on, but I won't. Mm-hmm. Because I ran out of my list. The synopsis of this story is, on the night of her wedding, Justine, or Kirsten Dunst, is struggling to be happy, even though it should be the happiest day of her life. It was an extravagant wedding, paid for by her sister and brother-in-law, who are trying to keep the bride and all of its guests in line. Meanwhile, Melancholia, which is a giant blue planet, is hurtling towards Earth, and Claire, who is Justine's sister, is struggling to maintain her composure with the fear of the impending disaster. Now, normally this is where I call on one of you guys to tell me what you think, but I watched this movie, thought it was beautiful to look at, And I came away from it and I had no idea what I just watched. I didn't get it. And so I went to the boards to ask for advice or explanation. And so this is my shout out to the Midnight Monster Club, most of which I'm under the impression are listening. One in particular, Leanne Albancy. I hope I pronounced it right. I'm sure I butchered it. But anyway, she did an amazing job of giving me a succinct explanation of what I just watched. So before we get too far into it, I would like to read what she explained to me, which helped out dramatically. So Melancholia is the second film in a Lars von Trier Depression trilogy, which I had no idea. Mm-hmm. So it was Antichrist, Melancholia, and Nymphomaniac. Also, you do not need to watch the other two to understand this one. He made a set of movies exploring the human condition, mental illness, and despair. It was a way that he processed his own journey through his own depression. Melancholia is about the family dynamics, the insignificance of humans in the grand scheme of the universe, and obviously depression and anxiety. It shows Kirsten Dunst, her journey, and she was the one who basically accepted death and destruction, and knowing there is an end is actually peaceful for her. So the actuality brings her calm. It's almost the question we have asked before in our group. Would you rather know the date or the cause of your death? She actually has an exact answer for both. So what else could she possibly worry about if she has the answers to those questions? However, her sister is a stand-in for what you could call the normies, the people who don't understand what they're dealing with or what people who deal with mental health look like and who can't deal with uncertainty. And that inability to cope with not having the answers leads to worse anxiety. Well, the plan is going to hit us. What if it does this? What if it does that? What if? And it's an ending cycle and there's more and more panic. So when death comes, she resists it. And that resistance is what makes it worse. That like unclogged the toilet in my head of all this junk that was floating around in there. So that I thank you, very much, Leanne, for explaining that. That helped me so much. So that being said, Matt, what did you think of this film?
Well, Leanne took fucking half of my notes.
yeah, seriously.
I think you're probably the only one of the three of us who didn't catch most of that.
Yeah, there goes my fucking notes. Awesome. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Leanne.
Thanks a lot, Leanne. We'll have to have that smarty pants on sometime.
We will.
But yeah, obviously it's about depression and I mean, even the planet that's going to crash into Earth is called Melancholia. It's, you know, but I thought this was beautiful, and this is by far my favorite of the three. I really enjoyed this, and at first I was kind of getting a little bored with it. I liked the wedding scenes and all of that, and I found it interesting. But as we kind of moved into part two of the, because it's split into two parts, right? I can't remember, the first one's called what's her name?
Part one,
or is it right? Part one, but there's a name for it. Part two was called Claire.
It's Justine.
Justine, yeah,
yeah.
And as we got into part two, I was starting to lose it a little bit, but then I found myself kind of getting anxiety about this planet, you know. And I thought that whole part of it was so fascinating, and it's fascinating on a couple different levels. It's fascinating on it being an analogy or a metaphor for depression and mental illness, but it's also fascinating in an actual literal sense of a planet crashing into Earth. This idea of and that coincides with, I think, a lot of the feelings people have who do go through depression, is this inability to feel like they're in control of their lives, you know. And if we knew a planet was coming and it was going to crash into Earth and we're all going to die, we would have all this sense of not being in control of our own fate and in a sense. Yeah, she's Leanne's right that Kirsten Dunst, her reaction to it was okay, because she's already been there, you know, this idea of death doesn't scare her. But at the same time, also knowing that it's coming, what can you do about it? You know, there's nothing you can do. And so I think we, even today, I mean, and we have had in this, I think, in this world, and especially in this country, kind of a sense of things not being in our own control for quite a while now. And I would reach back all the way back to like 9/11. And ever since that, I think Americans have, you know, up to that point, up to 9/11, Americans had a very keen idea that we're only going to get better and better and better and grow as an empire and bigger and bigger. And after 9/11, that kind of took some of that innocence away from us. And we, and I think today you'll see a lot of people, especially with everything going on in the world right now, this sense of things happening that are not in our control and people making decisions for us that are impacting our lives. And I think that a lot of that is in this movie, even though it's obviously not set in today, it's 2016, but just this idea of this impending doom coming and knowing that's it. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing we can do. We just have to accept that fate. And so as the movie wore on, I started to really get into it. And by the end, I absolutely loved this movie. And I think there's, you know, it's kind of close to a masterpiece in my view. I thought this was great. I don't know that I could say it's horror. To me, it doesn't feel like horror. I guess that the end is horror, but throughout most of it, it's more, you know, I guess that was also one of my notes. If it is horror, then it's a horror of existential dread. The idea of our own existence being on the line, I guess that does kind of qualify, but it's not overtly horror for sure. It's in the realm, I guess, but yeah. I do love it though, and I think it's a great pick, and I found myself really growing in my admiration for it as the movie went on, which is kind of the opposite of what I was expecting. I kind of felt like, oh no, is this going to be a slog here going on now into the part two? But I didn't. I found it becoming more tense and more exciting and horrific as we went on. So,
plus, I couldn't imagine Lars von Trier coming up with a 2.5 hour long slog.
No. I mean, if anything, he's got to have something interesting. But yeah. I just didn't know where it was going, you know. But yeah. I just found myself, especially every time they'd look up at the sky and say, "Oh, you know, that red planet moved," you know, or "Oh, it's going to miss us." All of that, it just, the tension built so slowly. And there was almost like a sound hum, you know, with the planet hovering close by. There was like this low tone sound that was underneath a lot of the movie. And I really began to notice it a lot in the second half of the film as the planet Melancholia got closer to Earth. So, great movie. Great.
All right, Mark, what do you think?
I really love this film, although I don't agree that this is an actual horror movie. There are some horrific examples of depressive behavior in it, though. And there is a tension throughout the entire film from start to finish. I mean, the beginning of the film is an example of what I thought maybe an AI film could start off to be, because that's what I thought when I was watching the first like 5 to 6 minutes of just the slow motion. I mean, they look like AI videos that I saw on TikTok, you know. It's like, it just looked very AI to me, but I mean, it was still stunning and beautiful. And with the music, it reminded me of Stanley Kubrick, like 2001 Space Odyssey or whatnot. But I mean, it was just really impressive to see for the first 6 minutes. Definitely a Stanley Kubrick vibe, you know, for the beginning. And holy cow, what a cast for a wedding party. I mean, Kiefer Sutherland, Charlotte Rampling, John Hurt. Seeing John Hurt was just like a treat for me, seeing, you know, him back on the screen. That was great. That one actor, Brady Corbett, he's the director of The Brutalist, and he's the one that was trying to get the ad campaign from Kristen Stewart, Justine. He had the notepad and the pen.
He directed The Brutalist?
He directed The Brutalist. He was in Funny Games. He was one of the actors in Funny Games, and he directed The Brutalist. So talk about getting an inspiration from, you know, Vaughn. And I think he's inspired by Paul Thomas Anderson. But, I mean, if you saw The Brutalist, I mean, you could see some similarities on how his style of directing from The Brutalist is with the...
He wrote it, too.
Huh?
He wrote it, too, The Brutalist.
Shit, did he? Holy cow. Yep. Pretty talented. You always think, you know, of, you know, the two greatest movies that start with the weddings, you know, The Godfather and The Deer Hunter. And, you know, so with this beginning of The Wedding, I thought I already had a false start, you know, with the first 6 minutes. And I'm just going, oh, there's no way. Cause I always compare opening wedding scenes, you know, to The Deer Hunter and The Godfather. And it definitely didn't disappoint for me. It really started off with the tension right when the father and the mother of the bride start doing their speeches and how depressing that was. And like one side of the family is just so messed up with depression and the other side of the family is so messed up with corruption and greed and power. I was like, it's like, it just was so fun to watch and just how beautiful everything looked. But like for me who suffers from depression, if I was on, you know, in one of my slumps and a planet was, you know, heading towards me in 4 days, you know, I would be exactly like, you know, Kristen Stewart, Justine. It's like, I wouldn't care, you know, when the sister was saying
Kristen Dunst,
huh?
You said Kristen Stewart.
Oh, damn it.
Kristen Dunst.
Kristen Dunst. Yeah. They look totally Kirsten. Alike.
Anyway.
But you know, when the sister's saying that, you know, we should be out on the terrace and sing songs and all that. And she's going, that's a completely fucking stupid idea. And now it's just like, hell yeah, it is. And it, like, no, it's like, I'm going to do that. It's like hang out and hold hands and do kumbaya on the terrace and all that. No, I'm going up to the log cabin. I'm going to get on the raft and I'm just going to lay down and just look at the stars and watch it happen. I don't want to be around the family and all that kind of stuff and watch people cry and panic and all that. I don't want to spend the rest, you know, rest of my days doing that. That doesn't sound like fun at all. I mean, I really wish I would able to see what was going on in the rest of the world, but it was so enclosed, you know, at this mansion. It was so beautiful to watch. And, you know, with the horses, you know, and, you know, the galloping and riding. And why didn't that horse go across that bridge? Was there any reason? Was there any explanations? Did your friend from movie Monster Watch, whatever, explain that to you?
No.
Damn it.
No, it didn't come up.
I don't know. I just felt no closure from that. And Kiefer got Sutherland, spooked. That. Huh?
Maybe he got spooked. I don't know.
I guess. But, I mean, they did it twice, and they just never really explained it. Yeah. Kiefer Sutherland, piece of shit, leaves his family. It's like, no, everything's okay, you know, and then takes the cyanide or, you know, overdoses on the pills that the mom brought and just pussied his way out of it, you know, in the horse barn. That really pissed me off. But I loved the ending of it. I thought it was beautiful to watch. I mean, that's, you know, one way to go, you know, put some branches up and get in a half-made igloo and, or no, teepee, not igloo, but no, I really loved the film. I'm glad you recommended, Joe. That would have totally like missed my radar, and I'm really glad I watched it. I loved it.
Well, good. I will say, I don't know, unless it's assigned, I don't know that I'm going to complete this trilogy. I don't know. I'll have to think about that. I know I'm not going to watch.
You only have one more.
Yeah. I know, but like, as long as I don't have to watch Antichrist again, I don't know that I can handle that.
Maybe someday.
Yeah, I do want to say I have one question. Justine and Claire are sisters. Why does Claire have a British accent and Justine not?
It didn't really get explained. Sister, I think, seems a bit older, but yeah, I don't know.
And Kiefer Sutherland has an American accent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Down so, on
and I and I think they could have cut out the 16-minute long limousine getting caught in the mud scene. It didn't advance the story at all. It was completely unnecessary. You know, when you've got a movie that's got, how long is was this thing? 2 hours and 15 minutes. This could have been just under 2 hours if they just cut out the limo part. So, but anyway, I agree with you guys. This is, it's a fantastic psychological movie to watch to make you think. And again, just like we said before, it's like the others, these are all absolutely gorgeous to watch. It's just, it's beauty on a screen. So, okay, we're going to go to the last one, which of course is The Cell from 2000, or as I like to call it, the only Jennifer Lopez movie that I can withstand watching her in.
Correct.
So this is directed by Tarsem Singh, starring Jennifer Lopez, Vince Vaughn, of all people, who knew, and Vincent D'Onofrio. This is about Catherine Deanne, who's a psychotherapist who is part of a revolutionary new treatment that allows her mind to enter the mind of her patients, literally. Her experiences in this method takes an unexpected turn when FBI agent Vince Vaughn comes to ask her for a desperate favor. They have just tracked down a notorious serial killer, Carl Starger, whose method of operation is to abduct women one at a time and place them in a secret area where they are kept for about 40 hours until they drown slowly. Unfortunately, the killer has fallen into an irreversible coma, which means that he can't confess where he's taken his latest victim before she dies. Now, Catherine Deanne must race against time to explore the twisted mind of a serial killer to get the information she needs, but Starger's damaged personality poses danger that threatened to overwhelm her. So, where do we leave off? Mark, what'd you think of this, Jim?
Joe, I love this movie.
Yeah,
I love this movie. I saw it twice in the movie theater when it came out. Saw it at the McClurg Court Theater in Chicago. And then when I saw it, I said, oh, I got to take my girlfriend to see it. Took her to see it. And we had to leave halfway through the movie because she couldn't handle it. She was scared to death. And I mean, she was so scared, she actually cried a little. And I never experienced seeing anyone so scared watching this film. I don't know if it was the visuals. I don't know if it was something that was dug up and reminded her of something when she was watching the film. I don't know.
Who she's but on she a was date like, with.
I only like, this is my whole reached movies. Over a couple times. That was it. No. No, but no, she wanted to leave. Like she, I mean, it really disturbed her that much. And I was like, it was really that scary. She was going, it was horrifying. And it was after even the horse was sliced up, you know, but it was, I don't know what it was, but we had to get up and leave. And I mean, I just love the movie. I mean, is this movie pretentious? No. Does it go too artsy? Not even close. I mean, I've heard people say that this film, that it needs to get over itself, that it's trying too hard, or it's, you know, a knockoff of Silence of the Lambs. I don't think it is. I think it's a brilliant visual mindfuck, and it has completely, you know, plenty of scares to make any horror fan, you know, pleased from the start to finish. I mean, obviously, this is my favorite Jennifer Lopez movie that she's done. I don't think, you know, her acting is the best. But, I mean, maybe some real reactions when, you know, she's in his mind seeing all these, you know, devastating and disturbing images. You know, maybe she could do more of a reaction just going, huh, what's this? And just tilting her head a little bit. I mean, I didn't see her hardly. It's nearly as scared as much. I mean, I know she's like a trained professional going into other people's minds, but this is some like sick shit I'm sure she hasn't really seen before. And just wanted a little bit more reaction out of her. Vince Vaughn is not the greatest detective in the world. And maybe he should have stayed a lawyer like before. I don't know. It's just, I mean, this could have been solved so easily if they just did good detective work. When they're in the basement, when they find, you know, the killer's basement and they see that logo sign and it's clearly polished. It's not, you know, being hidden or anything. It's right there in the open. They look at it. They didn't do any research on that. They decide to, you know, just take him into, you know, go into his mind. I mean, I know you can't really have a movie unless an interesting movie if you just, you know, solve the case like that. But I think that it could have been resolved and the case solved a little bit more, just a little bit more tricky, a little bit more, you know, interesting than how they've, you know, finished it off. But I mean, it's tense all the way through. Vincent is just awesome in this film, super scary. And the visuals of him coming down the stairs with the capes against the walls. And it's just when he's moving and, you know, with the hooks on his back, and it's all reminiscent of like what he does to himself and how beautiful and majestic he looks. I mean, you can't get that visual out of your head. It's amazing. It's perfect. But yeah, I love this film. Great pick, Joe.
All right, Matt, do you concur?
I liked it more than I did the first time I saw it. I've never liked this film. I hated it the first time I saw it in the theater.
Really?
But I liked it more this time, I think. I think it's kind of a dumb movie overall, but it's entertaining enough. I give it like 3 cuts. Vincent D'Onofrio. He's really good. Hank, we have another Hank sighting. I don't know.
Yes, we do.
How many movies have we watched and we have not seen Hank from Breaking Bad in any? And then the last 2 episodes, we've seen him in 2 different movies.
I think my next pick, I'm only picking films that Hank is in.
I think, yeah, Hank Horror. Hank that Horror.
Wait, who's easy. Hank?
Hank Horror.
From Breaking Bad.
The brother-in-law from Breaking Bad that, you know, the bald-headed detective.
I've never seen Breaking Bad.
ATF. He's an ATF.
How have you never seen
seen Breaking Bad?
I've never seen it. I know it's supposed to be one of the greatest shows ever. I heard The Wire is supposed to be the greatest show ever, too. I haven't seen either of those or Better Call Saul.
Or Mad Men? I haven't
seen The Wire.
I've never seen Mad Men either. Oh, my girlfriend's telling me to watch that shit, too.
Those are like 2 of the greatest TV shows ever, Breaking Bad and Mad Men.
Jesus.
And Three's Company. Oh,
yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so okay. I thought the kitchen scene with him screaming at the cabinet doors was unintentionally funny. And then, I don't know, there's just moments like if there was, you know, the doctor is like, I don't know if there's, because they can't find this girl and the guy's and Vincent D'Onofrio's in a coma. And the doctor's like, oh, if there was anything we could do. And then all of a sudden his eyes go and then we go into a slow motion shot of these FBI agents heading toward this. It was very a lot of the shots in this remind me very much of like Michael Bay, and it, you know, it's attractive to look at, but it wouldn't, you know, and then Vincent D'Onofrio's mind looks a lot like a Marilyn Manson video from 2000
or Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Nine Inch Nails.
The horn hair, but I think Vincent D'Onofrio was really creepy in that part where I don't know what he's supposed to be dressed up as, but it was almost like a Harlequin looking character,
like
and
a king,
the clown.
And he comes running across the and I don't think he was the king. Was he a king?
Yeah, but he had a crown. Yeah. And yeah.
Oh, okay, he came kind of running, but he was almost more like a fool than a king. But that part I thought was very creepy. Let's see. The whole part where she reversed the feeds and changed the codes on the doors and stuff. I'm like, when did she do that? When did that happen, by the way?
Don't cross the streams.
I know. Don't cross the streams.
We never cross the streams.
Generally, I thought the CGI in this for being 2000 was pretty darn good. I do agree that, you know, the cape scene is pretty cool. But the Mary scene, I thought he did a really good job of knowing, or, you know, whatever, the director had did a good job of knowing the limits of CGI at that time and not going too far, except in the scene with Mary. And there was like vines growing in the screen above them and stuff. It didn't look
terrible.
Yeah, it didn't look right for the scene.
It looked good back in 2000 on the screen, I remember. I thought it was really cool looking.
It certainly didn't add anything to it.
No.
And it didn't tie into anything after they revealed it either. So.
Yeah.
And I agree, Mark, with what you said about how they found I wish there had been a bit more detective work involved in this. It most of it was just about entering his mind, and it's entertaining. It's definitely I know you guys liked it more than I did, but I liked it more this time. When I saw it in the theater when it came out, I really didn't like it at all. And a lot of what Mark was saying about people say it's this and people say it's that, that's kind of what I was saying after I saw it the first time. But I had a bit more appreciation for it this time. I did at the time feel like it was a CGI ripoff of Silence of the Lambs, kind of, or not necessarily a ripoff, but just piggybacking on it. And I've had a bit more appreciation. It's certainly beautiful to look at. And Jennifer Lopez was, at this time still not just
relevant.
Yeah, she was, I guess, not just relevant, but I think she
was with Diddy at the time.
Oh, was she?
Yeah.
I mean, she's really good. Have you ever seen the movie Blood and Roses with Jack Nicholson and Michael Caine and her? She was really good in that. It was
Mark, do your Michael Caine impression.
But the telly.
What the?
Wait, hang on.
Spot on.
Is Michael Caine here with us?
Is Michael Caine in the room?
Stop shouting.
Wow.
I'm Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
Yeah, I'm Michael Caine. Try that.
Yeah.
It's a death trap.
Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay. I want to say again, not only was this gorgeous to look at, but I want to pay special note to the costuming. I found out that the woman that did the costumes for the 1992 Dracula is the same woman that got recruited to do the costumes for this, and she was given just blank check, like do whatever you want, make it look impressive, and I think she knocked it out of the park. However, I'm glad I finally figured this out, because I always thought that the costumes or the outfits that they wear when they go into the sleep chamber thing looked almost identical to Vlad the Impaler's armor from Dracula.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that always bothered me, and so now I'm glad I finally connected those dots. One stupid thing that has nothing to do with much, but at the beginning, they were going to pull the funding, or they were going to pull the little kid Edward out of this program because they weren't showing any results. And I kept thinking, well, if the dad wants to see real results, there's a third bay. Why don't you just have him go into his son's mind? He's the money. He's the bankroll. So prove it to him. It's not like he can't do it. That's why they had the third bay in the first place.
Yeah.
So, but that doesn't matter. I think there's one real bad failed attempt to try to make Jennifer Lopez character not so nice, or like she's really into this in her off hours too. When she's the scene at home where she's just wearing a shirt and smoking a doobie and watching Fantastic Planet, I like, do we need this? I didn't think so. But for the record, Fantastic Planet is one of the creepiest cartoons ever. I didn't understand Vincent D'Onofrio's process as a serial killer, because he was abducting these girls, drowning these girls, and then he bleaches them and washes them. Then he and they're clean, they're pure. Mm-hmm. Then he hangs over them with the rings that are in his back and makes his deposit on them and then disposes of the body. What I don't understand is, why would he do that last and not rewash them to get all of his DNA off of it? It's almost like he wants to be caught. So I just, as far as serial killers go, I just thought that was weird. Mm-hmm. I think as far as the acting goes in this film, Vincent D'Onofrio, I think, is superior in it. Vince Vaughn, I, in my opinion, he's the weak link in this.
Yeah.
But I think part of that is due to some bad writing.
Mm-hmm. He was the hot young actor at the time, you know, Swingers came out, at, you know, a few years or, you know, like 4 years before this.
Well, I mean, he already did Psycho.
Right.
Yeah. This was like right after Psycho.
Yeah.
So, by the way, the Carl, the serial killer, his brain thing that they call Weyland's infraction, mm-hmm. Completely fictional, made up for this film.
Just
FYI. Yeah. Mark, you don't have Weyland's infraction.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Positive.
Got it.
The slicing of the horse thing is by far, hands down, the coolest thing in this film. That is absolutely amazing. I don't know how they did it. It was just gorgeous and disgusting at the same time. I loved it. I had a choice between renting this film or buying it, and I bought it just so I could pretty much watch that scene over and over again. That, again, the costumes are just absolutely fantastic. I did find out, too, that that scene where he's like a demon in his own court, and he's attached to all that giant purple tapestry that's all the way around the room. I think they said it was the bottom half was actually realistic, and it was just the top half of those curtains, I guess, the fabric was CGI. I mean, obviously you can tell which parts were CGI and which ones weren't, but it was a nice collaboration of like half and half. So, mm-hmm. Oh, and I also want to point out there's a visual that I always thought was creepy when Vince Vaughn goes, for lack of a better term, when he enters the Matrix. I don't know what you want to call it, but when he goes under and he wakes up in Carl's mind, there's those three women with the little beanies on.
Yeah.
That like whisper and talk to him back and forth. That's just so creepy. Mm-hmm. It's such an interesting visual and just leaves you uneasy. So,
and his delivery was okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Delivery. Him and Jennifer Lopez, I would think the things that they encounter in this world should have evoked much more of a response than what they gave. I love the part, Matt, that you said is like a Marilyn Manson video, or I said Nine Inch Nails, when they enter his mind and they do these, portraits of the victims that Carl has had. There's the one girl that looks like she's, I guess, frozen. There's a lamb next to her. They're all kind of covered in ice. One's creepier than the other, but the one that always scared the crap out of me was the giant bodybuilder at the end. Mm. And she whips Jennifer Lopez into a wall. Oh my God. That whole thing is straight out of Nine Inch Nails. So anyway, I love this film. I think if you haven't seen it and you're listening to this podcast, you should watch it because it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So that's it. We're all complete. We're at the end of the art gallery.
Excellent. Excellent. Excellent.
Great picks, Joe.
Thank you.
So next time we have a special guest, Joe. We've got Catherine Horan is going to be joining us again.
Hey!
Yeah.
Catherine Horan.
Yeah, and so we're going to do a little unreliable narrators, Joe. Unreliable narrator horror.
Like Into the Woods?
No. Oh. So first off, we're going to be doing, it's a Korean film, A Tale of Two Sisters. And these two sisters come home after a stay in a mental institution, only to find disturbing events and a strained relationship with their mother, with their stepmother. There's some gaslighting going on. Do these girls see things that they're really seeing or not? But I've seen it before and I really, really enjoyed it. And it's one that's been on my list to have on. It's on AMC Plus, by the way. So,
oh, good. 'Cause I don't have that.
Oh, well, sorry. And if you,
it was A Tale of Two Titties.
A Tale of Two Sisters.
Sisters.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you watch Shudder through?
Shudder.
Oh, well, if you got AMC Plus through Amazon, then you could have Shudder and a lot of other movies.
Remind me that 8 months ago when I bought Shudder for the year.
Yeah, and oh god, yeah, and AMC Plus is like I think $7.99 or something per month. And
I just looked at this, and had I gotten AMC Plus and Shudder, it would have cost me $7 more for the year.
Oh well, if you can't find it, because I think it looks to me like it's only available on AMC Plus. So if you can't find it, then I'll have to pick another movie.
I'll figure it out.
All right. Let's see. Or you could just get AMC Plus for the month, I guess. Next is American Psycho from 2000, directed by Mary Harron, starring Christian Bale. And then last but not least, I believe this is Martin Scorsese's only horror-ish movie, and that is Shutter Island. Or no, he had the other one. I guess he did have another one, but this one fits the theme of unreliable narrator, and that is Shutter Island, starring.
Good. I've been wanting to watch that one again.
Leonardo DiCaprio and Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah.
Who Mark Ruffalo was in a was in my first acting class when I came to L.A. But believe it or not,
I don't believe it.
Yeah, believe it or not.
If you're gonna give me an option.
All right. So those are the picks again. Oh, and Shutter Island is on Peacock, and I think a few other services. No, it's just on. It's on Peacock. And then
what was American Horror
Psycho?
Story?
Or American Psycho? On, yeah, it's just it's on Fubo TV. I think you have that, right?
Which I do have.
Yeah, and it's also on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, it's on. I just watched that American Psycho last week.
Yeah, and
great
then,
movie.
And then
another home movie.
A Tale of Two Sisters again is on AMC Plus. So,
okay.
Thanks, Mark, for coming back.
Hey, yeah, no worries.
We'll have back.
To have it. We'll have to have you back again this summer, and also our 5 year anniversary is coming up. In I want you to mark this down on your
good
calendar,
Lord.
Mark. Our 5 year anniversary is coming in October, so we will have you back. I want to have Jimmy back, and we'll have to have a special like. You know, big jam. What would you call it? A jamboree or something, Joe? Or a hullabaloo?
Let's go with
you.
Got to
get like Catherine.
A hullabaloo. We have Catherine. We could have on. We could
Catherine,
have
friend of the show, Brian.
Friend of the show, Brian. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how much bandwidth we can consume with that episode. But
yeah,
that would be wild.
So here's a smattering of applause for Mark.
Hey.
And, so go to www.
Wait, you got anything else for Mark?
What else?
You don't have anything else for Mark? Any other little sound drop you want to play for Mark?
You don't have to do any sound drops, man. Don't
like,
do any sound
like
drops.
A baby.
Oh, shit.
God
no,
damn it,
the baby.
Hold on. It's
No, it doesn't matter.
My media thing is
vamp.
Nope.
We could vamp until Matt's ready.
Oh, here we go.
Jeez.
Blah, 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 blah.
I miss that song. Diggle, diggle, diggle.
Diggle, diggle, diggle.
Come on, you guys missed me a little. Just a little.
Just a little.
Oh, yeah, because we haven't played that sound drop since November.
That's
so
true.
Oh.
Yeah. But yeah, there's something wrong with my soundboard tonight. I can only do one, and then I've got to reset. Ah. So.
That's all what right. Our listeners love is when you pull back the curtain like that.
Yeah, I know. So go to CineScareHorror.com, www.CineScareHorror.com, and buy our merchandise. Check out our stuff. And I don't have any news on Halloween night. We have the film. Most of the film festivals that we're supposed to be hearing from don't start up until May, June, July. And then from the rest of the year, we should. Although, no, I did hear from one. We're going to be playing in LA at I can't think of the name of the film festival. No, but there's a film festival, and I'll announce that next week. There's a film festival in LA this June we're going to be playing at. So, all right, I guess that's it, and we'll
that's
see
it.
You next time.
Good night,
thanks
everybody.
For having me back on.
Oh yeah!
Oh yeah!
Yeah! Yeah.
Riverside,
come on!
Yo, yo, what's up, what's up?
Yeah.
My name is Superfan Mark, this is CineScare. We're going out like a deer running through the forest, getting hit by trees or cars. I ain't a rapper. So it's basically, you know, you eat a beautiful human girl and you get healthy from it. And, you know, you become beautiful.